Say, Avtara, Vayero, one of the simpler, if one can use the word, Haftaras to go through for the simple reason that it's narrative as opposed to poetry. Poetry is much harder. Narrative, one could give the simple events, and go into what Mephoshim say of the explanations involved. We're talking about a time in Jewish history, the time during the first Beis Hamikdash, when the Jewish nation was divided into two, the northern kingdom, which was completely idolatrous, and the southern kingdom, which had the Beis Hamikdash in, which was partially idolatrous. Some kings did Avodah Zorah, and of course we know there were good kings in the south. Of all the 20 kings in the northern kingdom of Eretz Yisrael, not a single one of them was known to be a Shomer Torah mitzvahs. Every single one in the north was bad. Every one. It is interesting. You talk about the Jewish nation. People have gone through history, analysing Jewish history at all sorts of times, and said, it's terrible, it can never get worse, it's never been as bad as this. I remember discussing it with the late Rabbi Vagshal Zatzal in Gateshead, the principal of the schools there. He said 90 to 95% of Klal Yisrael in those days were Ovdei Avodah Zorah. Literally, that is the state we were in. Even nowadays, whatever the situation is nowadays in the Jewish world, I don't think it's as bad as it was in the time of the first Beis Hamikdash. So in other words, wherever you can get assimilated around, what happened 3,000 years ago was a worse state than we are at the moment.
We've prayed for the Yetzirah.
That particular Yetzirah was taken away. It's been replaced by other things.
Right.
So at all times, they're good and bad. Everybody, it's up to what we have to do, and one day Moshiach will come regardless. So it's only a question of what are we doing to get nearer there, which we are all doing at the moment with every single mitzvah that we do, every word of Torah that we learn. So Baruch Hashem, we're going towards, we're getting nearer. So, there are two incidents that come in the Haftarah this week, both concerning the Novi Elisha. Elisha was the Talmud of Eliyahu HaNovi, and at the time we are dealing with, Eliyahu HaNovi had already gone up in a fiery chariot to Shomayim. So Elisha was the Godel Hador, the Novi par excellence, and he was the person involved in both of the incidents in the Haftarah. Interestingly, he lived in the north. So had Eliyahu HaNovi lived in the north. You'd think that, you know, such great Nevi'im would automatically be living in Yerushalayim next to the Beis HaMikdash. Apparently they weren't. Their job was to help the people. That was the job of a Novi. And the job of a Novi is not to be a tzaddik in pelts. Right? Yes, you think of the Novi, what can a Novi do? Obviously, he can sit next to the Beis HaMikdash, going off a korbanos every day, sitting on Torah all day long, but that wasn't his job. So, what had happened in the north? First thing we're talking about is Ovadia. Not mentioned by name here, but the Midrash says it directly. Ovadia, who himself became a Novi, one of the minor Nevi'im of the Treosor, Ovadia was a Ger Edomi. He was not born Jewish, he became Jewish. He was a person who was descended from Esau. And he lived, he was the main servant, a very wealthy man. So he was the main minister of Achav and Izebel. Two Rishoim. Where you could, whether you say Achav was worse than Izebel, and whether Izebel was worse, Izebel became the wife of Achav. I cannot see anywhere in Chazal which tells us that Izebel ever had a Giur Kahalocha. She did have a Zorah. Literally, she came from a family of Esbal. Her father was a king of the Goyim. Everybody was over there by the Zorah. And when she was Jewish, she did have a Zorah. And her husband Achav wasn't from. He also did have Avodah Zorah. How can you say that a man who is over the Avodah Zorah marries a woman who starts life being non-Jewish, and a woman who herself, we find everything about her after she becomes Jewish, that she is doing Avodah Zorah, and you tell me that she had a Giur Kahalocha? Where did she have three Dayonim who taught her how to keep Torah or mitzvahs that she ever kept? So Achav married Izebel, who was Ovedes Avodah Zorah. Right? They had three children. They had three, Yehoram, they had Achaziah, and they had Asaliah. Alright, well, Yehoram and Achaziah became kings of Yisrael. How did they? They didn't become Jewish. They weren't Jewish either. And what happened then? And Asaliah married over onto the other side. Presumably, she married the king. There was a shidduch maid between the king. The Jehoshaphat made a shidduch because he wanted to try and be makarav the northern kingdom to accept him. He was a ben achaben from David HaMelech. He wanted to try and get them back. So he took Asaliah, who was the daughter of Achav, to be a wife of his own son Yehoram. Anyway, what happened? And she was a terrible woman. So maybe she had a Giur Kahalocha, at least to start with. Okay, so she was Jewish. But the whole family was Ovedes Zorah. So, and Ovadiah was a ger who lived among these people. And we're told that if a person from Edom, from Esau, could live with two Ovedes Avodah Zorah, a king and a queen, who did Avodah Zorah the whole time, and he could be a frum person, then Kal Vachomer, then you can blame Esau himself, who lived among his parents, Yitzchok and Rivka. And Esau went completely the opposite way. In other words, it's not a question of who you live among. It's a question of what you want to do. Right? Nobody can go around saying, the reason I am the way I am is because of the way I was brought up, the people I was living among. Esau was completely the opposite of his parents, and Ovadiah was completely the opposite of Achav and Izebel.
So with Esau, like, wrote Bonim Devil Acheha A, so
it's a Achei, lot of, okay. Can be like that, but nevertheless, you have the people that you live among, you can copy. That's why we're told, go and live among people you want to copy. Choose the people you want to copy and go and live next door to them. You've got a better chance that way. Anyway, so what happened was that Izebel went about trying to kill every single Navi she could find. Everybody who was from. And the Vim, you see, they still had a very high level to be chosen as a Navi. Who do we have nowadays? We've got great Talmidei Chachamim, but we have nobody who is on the level of being a Navi. And in those days we had Nevi'im. So Ovadiah, Izebel was literally going massacring Nevi'im around the place. And what did Ovadiah do? He took 100 Nevi'im, hid them in two caves, 50 in one, 50 in another, and he had to support them. He was a wealthy man, and all his money went down and down and down and down till he had nothing left. He supported them with food, with drink, and with oil. And so the Midrash says that he supported them with oil. He gave them, what was the oil? So that they could learn. Since they were in a cave, and they could learn all day and night without the light, they could have light there. So they could learn Torah. So that's what he did, tremendous tzaddik. And then he had to borrow money, he had no more left. And the massacre was still going on, so therefore he had to go and borrow money. Who did he borrow from? Strangely enough, the son of the king. Yehoram ben Achav was quite happy to lend him money on interest. Since it was a question of Pikuach Nefesh, he had to borrow money on interest. And that's where he had, but either it, or on its own it made him ill.
The one who lent him was a goy.
But I knew that he made, all right, he's a goy. If your home was a goy, there's no, this saved the problem. But all right, you're quite right, quite right. So anyway, he borrowed from Yehoram, and he borrowed, and having done that, so now it's a question of how he's going to pay it back. He got ill, either it's directly because he was worrying about it, he became ill and he was literally dying, and his wife says to him, how am I going to pay it back? To pay back the money. How am I going to get the money to pay back? So he said, don't worry, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will look after, go to Elisha. Go to Elisha and ask Elisha what to do. Right. So that's what happens. So now what happens is she goes to Elisha and she says that my husband has died. So please, can you do something about it? And the Yehoram came along and said, if you haven't got any money to pay, then the next thing you can do is give your children. I'll take them as slaves. Right. So what happens? So Elisha says to her, what can I do? What can I do? I have to do a nace. And he's being asked. Elisha was by no means a rich man personally. We are not talking about her going to collect stocker from Elisha. Elisha didn't have the money to give stocker. But Elisha had the ability to do various nisim that he could do. But a nace has to start somewhere. You can't just do abracadabra and make it come out of the window. It doesn't. So therefore he says to her, what have you got? She had literally, I've got nothing in the house, absolutely nothing. Because her husband had sold everything, single thing she had, to raise money to support the Nevi'im whom he was hiding. So literally there was nothing left, there was one jug of oil. Yeah? How much oil was there? Says the Midrash that there was enough oil, Shir shel shemen legabe Shabbos. The first Mishnah in the 8th Perek HaMotziyayin of Shabbos and tells us there's 5 things mentioned in the Mishnah. HaMotziyayin, Kedem Zigas HaKos. There are 5 things. Yechad Hashem, Yod, Ches, Dalet, Shin, Mem. He renews them. Why those letters, I don't know, but those are the 5 letters, and the Shin is Shemen, Kedem Zigas HaKos. Everything in Hilchos Shabbos where you have a shiur. Yes? It's not a question of take a crumb out into the street and automatically midoraisi and machal Shabbos. Midoraisi, you're not machal Shabbos. There's no purpose of a crumb. The whole point of Shabbos is that everything we do on a weekday has a purpose, and if you do exactly the same thing as a melacha on Shabbos, you're doing an aveiro. Why? Because it has a purpose on a weekday. If it hasn't got a purpose on a weekday, then how's that going to be a melacha on Shabbos? What are you doing? Taking one crumb out into the street, what's the melacha? So therefore, there's always a minimum shiur that has a value. So therefore, the minimum shiur of oil is kadesichas eber katon, the amount of oil that you put on a finger for a baby. To rub oil on a finger, eber katon, that is the smallest amount. And that was the amount that was left in one jug. And that was all she had. You can imagine what poor means? That was all she had. And Elisha said, right, that's where we're going to start from. So he says to her, Nechisha li loch kelim min achutz. Go and borrow kelim from other people. Why? Go and borrow. Because, again, we have to start with what's there, and you have to make a shadlus. You've got to make some effort yourself. So therefore he tells her, go and borrow. Go to other people. You've got to do that effort. So she gets her sons to go and borrow everything. And kelim reikim al tamiti, take as many as you can. Literally, I can do the nace I can do starts off with what we've got, and then we can carry on until there's nothing more we can do. Once you've done that, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do the rest. So you see the principle of how a Novi is doing a nace. Start with what you've got, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do the rest. Good. So therefore, what happens next is that Uvos, and you come along, close the door, because the covered of the nace is Bahasneya. Nisim, Elisha had no problem with her telling people what happened. In fact, he wanted her later on to tell people. They'd have to believe her. But that's only if she was such a good person, they would believe her anyway. but telling people, because otherwise people would wonder where she got all the money from. Where did she get this oil from? She sold the oil when she got it and stopped the oil, and the money was used. So therefore, and not only that, she had more. She had so much money, people would wonder, how did she come in, where did she win the lottery? How did she get all the money? So therefore she had to tell people. But the nace itself was not to be done in public. The nace works better for Hatsneya. So she would do that. And not only that, but how it works was that the jug that she had with a tiny bit of oil in it would fill up. And one of the Mephoshim says that the air, what happens as you pour out, automatically air comes in. The nace was that the air that came in would change into oil. So literally, as nature abhors a vacuum. You don't have a vacuum anywhere. So the moment the oil comes out, more air comes in. And as the air comes in, the air changes in the vessel into oil. So nobody can see that either. It's got a narrow top. So as you pour out, air goes in, the air changes into. I believe the same nace was done by Abu Chatzera. Right? By the Baba Sali, did the same nace when pouring out arak for people. The same principle that Elisha did. And he had that ability. Do not ask me how, but that's the mice of people who saw him do it. Take one bottle without changing it, and that one bottle would be enough to pour out for every single person around, and it could be hundreds of people. And that's what he did. The same principle, like HaKadosh Baruch Hu taking what was there, which you can't see, and simply the air gets topped up into the liquid. The same nace with the Baba Sali, the same thing was said about when he went to ask somebody to take him from Netivot to Yerushalayim. The same thing. He filled up with a full tank of petrol to go all the way to Yerushalayim and to come back. And when he came back, it was completely full. Nothing had changed. In other words, the same principle, like HaKadosh Baruch Hu taking a liquid, as the liquid goes down, air comes in. As the air comes in, automatically the air changes into the liquid. Right. So she did that, and each time there was anything, any new vessel filled with oil, the vessel would be taken away, and once it's taken away, then it can be used, and it'll stay oil. Right. So she went from Elisha, she closed the door, they brought her the kalim, she poured out, and then she said, bring me another one, another one, another one, till finally her child's son said to her, ain't od keli. There's nothing left. Literally, I've gone round everywhere around the area, I've borrowed every single vessel I can find, and there aren't any left. At that stage, vayamod hashemen, the oil stopped. The question is, what did it mean? It stopped. Vayamod, it stood. So one of the Mephoshim says on that, the Midrash says, that what happened to the oil, that it stopped, means it went up in price. How he gets that out of the word, I don't know. The oil stood up. So stood up is a word for going up in price. So the price of oil went up. She went and asked Ashila whether she needs to take Trumas and Maestros on this oil, to which the answer was, it's only olive oil that needs Trumas and Maestros. This is not olive oil, this is miracle oil. Doesn't come from olives. It comes from a nace. And therefore there's no need to give Trumas and Maestros on it. So now she can take it. And she went to Elisha. And she asked Elisha what to do. And he said, go and sell the oil, pay the debt, and live off the money, live off the remainder. It's interesting. The Midrash says as well that she would have enough money left over, once she'd paid Yehoram the money that was owed, she would have enough money to live until Techias HaMesim. So whether that means she lived and she's still alive somewhere, we don't know, and has enough to live on, or the money was then given over to some source which will then help other people, and the money will then literally develop itself. As the right person has the money, you spend the money, you invest the money, more money comes back, and the money continues from that source of money until Techias HaMesim, the money will continue. Maybe that's trust. Where there's somebody, Rav Dovid HaNogid, he says, makes two morals out of this Masa. There's two things he says. He says, if you receive a favor from someone, keep the person informed about the favour. Yeah? Here's my sim about great Gedolim who asked to daven for somebody, and if they're asked to daven, I think I've shackled once, carried on davening 8 years for someone. Yeah? And only when he asked, the first chance he had to ask somebody about this person, how is this person, was 8 years later. Because you've got to go back. You know, he says, people come back. Rachman Litzan, there's bad news, they come back and tell me bad news. But if there's good news, they don't tell me. Is it Indian that somebody asks, it helps you with something? Go back and tell them how you're getting on. Keep the person informed. So that's why they should go back to Elisha and also ask for any advice. So the person who gives you the thing in the first place, does the person did you a favor, go and ask them, what should I do? Ask them for help with the favor. I do have a question. Thank you very much for giving me what you did. Now I'm going to disappear. No, if your person's done you a favour, tell them how it's getting on and ask them, what do you suggest I should do? What can I do with this now? That's one piece of advice. And the second one is, if you get money, Rabbi David Anog, it says, first thing you do with your money is pay debts. Then use the rest of the money for anything else. People have a habit, unfortunately, a yetzer hara, that when you receive any amount of money, the first thing I do with my money is go on holiday. Right, it's nice to have the extra money, Baruch Hashem, I can spend it on this. And when I come back, I've got any money left over, I owe somebody, I owe the milkman, I'll pay the milkman then after that. So no, he says, the first thing you do, you learn from Elisha, is that whenever you get extra money, first thing you do is pay money you owe. Anything that's left, Baruch Hashem, you can do other things with.
You see that by Avraham Avinu as well?
Pardon?
You see that by Avraham Avinu.
Carry on.
He paid his debts.
It's interesting. When Avraham Avinu would say Avraham paid his debts, he went back to the same place to pay. Because Avraham Avinu had more money when he came back from Mitzrayim. He'd given him lots of presents in Mitzrayim. So therefore there's two things about say Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was far more wealthy when he left Mitzrayim, so automatically you'd think that he stayed in a bed and breakfast on the way down and in the Hilton on the way back. Avraham Avinu did not stay in the Hilton on the way back. He stayed in the same B&B when he went back from Mitzrayim as he did on the way down. And he hadn't had the ability to pay on the way down. So what did he do? Is that he had to go in a hurry. So he didn't have the money at the time. He had more money later on. So the first thing he did was to go and pay the money that he owed. Yeah. So next thing was the main master, the long master in the Haftarah, is where Elisha came to Shunem. Shunem is a town in the middle. You've seen pictures of the house of the Shunammis. They say the place where the Shunammis lived 3,000 years ago. I've seen pictures of it, where that house is nowadays. They say there's a tradition that this is where the Shunammis lived. We have Avishak HaShunammis, who according to the Midrash was the sister of the lady here. There are different opinions. Avishak HaShunammis was the girl who kept David HaMelech warm when David HaMelech was old. That's the Haftarah we have on next week in Chayisara of Avishak HaShunammis. So, her great tzaddikus, and her sister was a great tzaddikus, the lady here. And the lady here, we are told, again, there are different midrashim. I'll give you the one that tells you she was the mother of Chavakuk HaNovi. And the connection between the Haftarah today and Chavakuk HaNovi. We'll see how it goes. So what happens? Elisha comes to Shunem. There's a great lady, Aisha Gadola, an aristocratic lady, a prominent lady, and she persuaded him to come and stay with her and her husband. And he would come in every time he passed through the area. He would come in and eat, and she'd give him a meal. And she says to her husband, "I know that he's a holy man. This man who comes with us is holy, and therefore I want to give him a special room. A room for himself." And she realized as well that it was dangerous to stare at him. He was so kodosh himself. The Midrash says that people who stared at Elisha HaNovi died. So she realized that the way to talk to him was by not talking directly, looking directly at him. So she wanted to give him a room of his own. They would make a room on the roof. So Alias Kir Katano. The word Kir connects to the word Tikro. Tikro means a ceiling. In other words, they had a room like on the roof. with just walls there. You could go and stay up there. So she wanted to make a ceiling there to cover it over. This would be his room. It says, Nosim lo will make for him shom there. And the four words, mito, the shulchan, the chisei umenorah. Pasuk yud. A bed, a table, a chair, a menorah and a lamp. Literally, mito is a mem, shulchan is a shin, kisei is a kaf, menorah from the word ner is a nun, mem, shin, chof, nun, mishkan. The word mishkan stands for those four words. And this is the connection that mishkan we have, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shkina, comes now to anybody who provides hachnosas orchim. And what's the hachnosas orchim? A bed, a table, a chair, and a lamp. That's what you provide. You give a person a room with all the things they need for their own privacy and their own comfort. So that's what she wanted to make for him. And one day he comes along, he goes there. She saw as well, Rashi says that there was never a fly on the table. It's hot area, Eretz Yisrael, flies all over the place. No fly sat on the food, sat on the table even, where Elisha was sitting there. There was no fly there. And she noticed that his sheets were always clean. Even though he slept on them, the sheets were clean. And not only that, the Midrash says that they smelt nice. Had a wonderful smell from his sheets. And she realized there's something very, very holy about him. So what happens is that she made a room, this room for him. And he came in. Every time he came, he stayed there. So he says to Gehazi. Gehazi was his Na'ar, a whole Gemara about Gehazi. It's interesting. This is the Haftarah for this week. Today, Dafayomi, is Chukhes of Sanhedrin, is talks about Gehazi being one of the four people who lost their chelik, the four Hidyotas who lost their chelik in Olam Haba. Right? Of all the people we have in the whole of Tanakh, there are seven people who lost their chelik in Olam Haba. Yes, and fascinating, one of those people was Bilam. And Bilam was a goy. So as the Mevarshim say, if you're told that Bilam was the only goy who had lost his chelik in Olam Haba, implies that a normal goy automatically gets a chelik in Olam Haba. Right? Unless he does something to lose it, he's also got a chelik in Olam Haba. There's no difference. So, Gehazi was one of these bad people. How he became Elisha's Talmud, I don't know. But he did, and she realized that he wasn't as holy as the Rebbe. Yes, she didn't want to work with Gehazi. Gehazi did not act in a sneeristic way, and she tried to talk directly to Elisha rather than via Gehazi. Normally, everything went through. Elisha spoke through Gehazi to people, and people went back through Gehazi to Elisha, and she wanted to avoid that. She didn't want to have anything to do with Gehazi. So, Elisha tells her, "Krol Ashuna Mesazos, call her." And she stood there, and Elisha said, "You've done so much trouble for us, what can I do for you? What can we do?" To which she says, "I don't need anything." The Midrash says it was Rosh Hashanah. "Can we speak to you? Hayesh Nadab Eloch El HaMelech. Can we speak to the Melech? HaMelech HaKadosh. Is there anything I can daven for you to the Rabban Shalom?" And she said, "I don't need. It's very kind of you, but I don't need. Besoch ami anochi yashoves. I live among my people." Which is simple, pshat, very nice. I'm quite happy with where I am at the moment. But the besoch ami is that to realize that if I am together with Klal Yisrael, with my people, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that means I'm involved with them. The besoch. Fascinating word, the word besoch. Where do you find besoch in this week's Hidra? About Lot was living besoch among the people in Sodom. Among. And it was a good thing. He was involved. He did, unfortunately, they were Rishoim, and that wasn't the right thing to go and live there. But in itself, he wanted to help. He tried to defend them. The besoch is being concerned about people. I am safer if I am around Klal Yisrael and we work together, I'm with them, I help them, they help me. And that way when HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges us, he sees me as part of the community. And that's the safest place one can be. And yes, I can go on my own and live on a desert island and be a great tzaddik. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't look at me as a great tzaddik on a desert island. On the desert island, there's only me there. There's only me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "What are you doing?" Well, I could, so she says, "Besoch ami, please don't give me special treatment. I don't want to be seen as special. I want to be seen amongst everybody else. If I'm with everybody else, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees me with everyone else, and I've got a far better chance of having a good mishpat, a good din, if I'm with everybody else." That's the Besoch ami Anochi Yosheves. Right, but Elisha wasn't happy, so he did not know. But Gehaz, he said, "Avol," lovely word, "Avol." We've taken the word avol over the years and made it into a but. Avol, translated one place, be'emes. Avol means in truth. Avol, in the Targum says, be'kushto. Same thing, kushto is emes. Avol means in truth. However, indeed. That's what the word avol means. Not just simply a but. If you want to say but in Hebrew, you use a letter vov. Letter vov, the. If you have one thing, if the next thing agrees with the first one, you say and. If the next thing contrasts the first one, in English you say but. But there's no difference, it's just the next thing. Event one and event two. Event one happens, but event two. Look at the context, you'll see that it contrasts. So what happens here? So Avol, he says, one thing that with all, he's such a great tzaddikess. Such a great tzaddikess, and yet there is still something wrong. She hasn't got a son. She's missing a child, and her husband is old. So therefore, it's not a question of let's wait, let's get on with it. So Elisha says to her, "The lamoed hazek ha'es chayo," and this is the connection to Vayera, "this time next year, at chovekes bein, you will be embracing a son." The chovekes, ches veis kuf, is to embrace, to, and chavakuk has a double kuf, ches veis kuf with a second kuf. We find because the extra, that not only she herself had, her masim tovim was so great that itself gave her the rights, but in addition, the emuna that she had in the Novi telling her it was a second thing, an extra bit. So he doubled off the ches veis kuf and another kuf, and go the son chavakuk, who would be born and became a Novi. And what's one of the famous statements of Habakkuk? Tzadik be'emunah so yichyeh. A tzadik lives with his emunah, and that he got from his mother, from the Shunamis here. So, she said, "Al techazeh be'emunah." She said to her, to the Novi, "Al techazeh b'shivchosecho," don't deny, don't lie to me. Wait a minute, what did he say to her? He said, "This time next year, at Chovek Espain, you'll be embracing a son." That's all he said. What did the Malach say to Avram and Sarah? The murder said, "Oshuv Eilecho, I will come back to you. I'll be back." He said, "Why didn't you say the same thing?" Says it in the Torah, "Why didn't you say you're going to come back to me?" He said, "Because that was a Malach talking. Malachim live forever. I'm a human being. I don't know how long I'm going to live. So I can't guarantee it'll be me personally, but I can tell you what's going to happen is that you will have the child." We do not find that Elisha here actually either davened to Hashem, or either before he said it or after he said it. We find that Elisha himself was punished, the fact that he said she's going to have a child. Where does he get it from? In his own emunah, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would definitely give her because of the fact she was such a great tzaddikess. It was his own personal emunah, but we find that even a Novi has got to have a certain degree of, you can't expect. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has his own reasons for things, so therefore he should have davened to see whether HaKadosh Baruch Hu would give a child. As it was, he forced Hashem to give her a child. Literally, tzaddik goes there, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mekayim. Right? He says that she's going to have a child, and therefore she's going to have a child, but that's why the child became ill and died. Because he said, "You're going to embrace a child." And she was worried. She had Ruach HaKodesh to realize that if she's told that she's going to embrace the child, that means she's going to give birth to a baby, she'll cuddle the baby, and who knows how long it's going to go on for. So she herself was worried. She didn't want, she wanted a child who would grow up and live a normal life. But Elisha didn't say any more. He could not do more.
We don't see with the Shimon either that Elisha asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu,
That, say that again?
We don't see with the Shimon. The first part of the Torah.
Yes.
The Nishash, before he told.
About that, apparently, this is a question of life. About giving life was something that goes beyond what a Navi can do. That's life. There it's a question of a Navi, of a nace regarding oil, that is within his power. But not life. Life is something strange. So, the boy grew up and was old enough to say, went out to the coatsim. Yeah, he went out to the father, to the harvesters in the field, and then he says, it's interesting, we have literally in 20 words, don't know where anywhere else in Tanakh you have so many alephs. You've got 20 words and 18 of them contain an aleph. Two of them without, 18, chai. Literally, 18 words with an aleph in. For whatever reason it is, the idea of the letter aleph. But you've got 18 in a row with two breaks. Right, so they go. He went out to the coat's room, and then he wasn't feeling well in the field. He said, Roshi, Roshi. He repeated himself, because it's an unfortunate saving. A person feels ill, never he repeats what he says. So the father said, take him to his mother, and brought him to his mother, and the mother had him on her lap, until midday, and the boy died at midday. So what did she do? She had such emuna that the Navi could do. The Navi had given the child life in the first place, and therefore she had emuna that the Navi could bring back the life. Is what the Musas for him say about the proof that Tchias HaMesim is going to come is a simple Kal Vachomer. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu can give us life from nothing, then Kal Vachomer, he can take the person who's already passed away and give him life again. After all, where were we before we were born? By definition, before we were born, I didn't exist there. So then HaKadosh Baruch Hu took me from non-existence into existence in this world. So Kal Vachomer, the Sforim say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could take me again and simply give the same life back. If he can give it in the first place. And here, she has the same emunah that says that their Navi can give it to her. And give the life back to the child. He gave the life in the first place, he can give the life back to the child. So Vatal Vatashkivehu, she lay him down on the bed. Because there was a holy bed, and therefore it's a good place to put the child. And then she closed the door, didn't tell anybody, didn't tell her husband even. The husband wasn't told that the boy had died. And she went off with her own servant, and she hurried to go, literally, Barutza, in a hurry, we'll go and get the Navi. And the husband said, why are you going? He said, L'chodesh l'shabos, on Yom Tov, the Talmidim every day learn with the Rebbe. On Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh were days they got off. On Yom Tov, there were droshes of Yom Tov. Everybody came for droshes on Yom Tov. It wasn't the time to go visiting. The ladies couldn't go on Yom Tov. But on Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh were times off. So therefore, that was the time ladies would go and visit the Navi when they wanted to see. So that's why the husband didn't understand. Why are you going to visit the Navi? It's the wrong day of the week. So she said, Shalom, there's no problem, it's okay. And she says, hurry up, she says to the servant, don't slow down, let's go. And she went to Har HaKarmel, which is where he was. And as soon as he saw her, he says to Gehazi, that's who she is, go and run and fetch her and tell her, is everything okay? Are you all right? Your husband all right? The child all right? And she said, it's all right. She did not want to talk to Gehazi one word more than was necessary. So now what happened was that she didn't want to tell the bad news, even to Elisha. The fact that Elisha didn't know the boy had died, and that itself would have put her off, were not for a tremendous emunah. It was itself a negative point. You'd think that the Navi would automatically see her and realize exactly why she was coming. But he didn't realize it. And that could have put her off, but her emunah, that he will be able to do something regardless. So, when he said to her, he said to her, what's happened? And she came and threw herself at Elisha's feet, and Gehazi tried to push her away, and the Mephoshim say that when Gehazi tried to push her away, he did it in a rude way. Yes? But Elisha said, leave her. She threw herself at his feet, and she said, and she didn't say directly, in no way did she say the boy is dead. She didn't say that. And even the Mefarshim disagree on whether he actually was dead or merely in a very deep coma. Some Mefarshim say he was in a deep coma. Others say that the boy had actually died. So Elisha said, I don't know. I do not know. Hashem has hidden it from me, hasn't told me about it. And she said, I didn't ask for a child. I said, don't deceive me. So he told Gehazi to go and take my stick. Yes, take it and go. All you'll have to do is put the stick. He thought the boy was only in a coma. If the boy had only collapsed and was still alive, then the stick of Elisha put on that boy's face would be enough to revive him straight away. Right? But he said to Gehazi, don't tell anybody where you're going, what you're doing. Anybody greets you, don't answer. And unfortunately, Gehazi did exactly the opposite. He didn't believe what he was told to do, to the extent that he took the stick and told everybody, stick, you know what I'm going to do? There's a boy, boy's died, boy's collapsed. I'm going to go and bring the boy back to life. Come have a watch. And of course it didn't, obviously nothing happened. Yep. So the mother, did not go with Gehazi, she stayed with Elisha. She wanted to stay with Elisha. Gehazi went in front, nothing happened. Nothing happened. It didn't get nothing would happen there. All right. So the Shunammus was sure that Gehazi couldn't be the shadech to do the nace. So it had to be that Elisha would go personally. All right. So what happened in Kol Ben Koshev? There was no sound. The boy didn't do anything. If the boy had breathed, if the boy had blinked, the father should say, just literally blinked his eyes, you can see he's alive. But he didn't do anything. Nothing happened. So therefore, Gehazi came back and said, Lo heketz hanoar, the boy has not woken up, aroused in any way. So Elisha came along, and what did Elisha do? He closed the door, and he davened, literally just the two of them in the room. He lay down on the boy, literally on top of the boy, placed his mouth on the mouth, the eyes on the eyes, hands on the hands, literally prostrated himself over the boy completely. And again, the idea of putting warmth to do the maximum he could regarding reviving a child by warming the body. Literally, that's what he tried to do. So, and what happened? The flesh of the child warmed up. But that doesn't mean anything other than putting a dead body into an incinerator. He just warmed it up. So what did he do? He walked up and down, and then lay down again. And finally, the nace happened. The boy sneezed 7 times, and then the boy opened his eyes. And then he told Gehazi, go and get the mother. And he brought the mother. He said, take your son up. Don't know what the reason is why he said, pick up the boy. And I don't know, maybe the boy couldn't walk at that time. Literally, he wasn't sort of immediately back to good health when the mother picked him up. And she took the boy, about 18, she went out. And we said this double, the chibuk, the 2 points put together, was the fact that she had such emunah in what Elisha could do, regardless of everything around, he can give life, and her emunah in what her husband had done, the saving the lives of these people, despite the fact that literally, which for a man can do it, but how can a lady see it happen? A lady to see her husband giving away every penny they've got and selling everything in the house, purely for the sake of these Nevi'im in the cave. And we're not talking about where everybody else was doing the same mitzvah. We're talking about everybody else wasn't doing the mitzvah. Everybody else was seen as stupid. You want to live like a normal person, then live like a normal person. Let them leave Nevi'im to themselves. If they're such holy people, surely they can look after themselves. But she had no feeling of that. She had totally, if her husband is doing this is the right thing to do. And that's how her husband got his Nevuah. He became a Novi, and he has the Nevuah of Avadia came because of his tzidkus, and she had the tzidkus of believing what her husband was doing was the right thing, and through that, she had the zechus that her boy came back to life, and he grew up himself to become a Novi. Same number.